Well, good morning and good evening, EPL State of Mind listeners. Get ready for another exhilarating episode of EPL State of Mind, where the footballing saga unfolds with twists and turns and unexpected drama. In this week's edition, we dive deep into the intense battle to avoid relegation as a shakeup that has sent shockwaves across the league is now exposed. But that's not all. The FA Cup delivered fireworks of its own, with Coventry City's major upset sending reverberations through the footballing world. And let's not forget about the theatrics in the Northwest Derby, from an extra time goal bonanza to a thrilling climax. We unpack the drama that unfolded in what will go down as a classic at Old Trafford. Be on the lookout for that and so much more as we prepare to delve into the EPL State of Mind once more. Well, welcome back, lads. Good to see you guys as always. Kyle and Sean, how are we doing today? I always love it. I need to say who's next, because then we just got that little bit of space, and Kyle's too polite to not let Sean go first. Sean's too polite to not let Kyle go first. So Kyle, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good, gentlemen. It's going to be a fun episode. A lot of fun goals this weekend. A lot of red cards this weekend, too. It was just an all-around exciting, fun, football-filled weekend.
It's definitely one that we're going to hold on to a little bit, as the title of our subject this week is the International Break Blues. So it was exactly what we needed. So I agree with you, Kyle. Sean, how are you feeling?
Little mixed emotions. Yeah. Don't ever like losing to Manchester United, but given the situation, it might honestly be a better thing for Liverpool not to play as many games down the stretch. So a mix of emotions, no doubt. I definitely am excited about one thing, and we'll get to it right now, which is Nottingham Forest point deduction, because they are, as I've said previously, my arch nemesis in championship, you rat bastards.
Yes, if you could not tell based off of Sean's incredible segue, Nottingham Forest leads us with the hot news, which we're going to talk about. And then that is they have finally been handed their point deduction. They follow suit with Everton, who currently has a 6-point deduction. And now the trees are handed a 4-point deduction. Right, it's 4, not 3. Yeah, it's 4 instead of 6. Yeah, it's 4. So the tricky trees were, you know, clear of relegation on the precipice of it, but now they drop to 18th place, which is 1 point behind our favorites to not be relegated, just simply because we want the Hatters to stay up, and that's Luton Town for survival. So it just kind of highlights how important, again, this game this past weekend was between Nottingham Forest and Luton. And this could have gone a lot worse for Forest if they weren't able to squeak away with at least a point in this. In other words, they would be sitting 2 points behind Luton Town, and or 3 points rather behind Luton Town, and it would be a different story that we're having. But Sean, why don't you kind of take us through what happened with this? Because a lot of people are probably asking, well, Everton broke the same amount of violations. It was a 10-point deduction. They appealed, and then they got 6-point deduction instead, and Forest had similar financial breaches in the profit and sustainability rules and regulations, but they're only walking away with 4 points. So what's going on here?
Yeah, so I basically read the report about this, and essentially Forest did break, like you said, the P&S rules that allowed for a £61 million loss during the three-year period between this season and the previous two. Their punishment or their limit was less, because they immediately took responsibility for breaching the rules and worked with the Premier League on it, whereas Everton denied it initially and also tried to finagle their way around it. The one thing I thought that was interesting also was that Brennan Johnson's sale technically happened after the Premier League financial calendar had ended. So that didn't count, and that was factored in there as well. So it was basically a 6-point deduction, but because of their mitigating circumstances and their work with the Premier League, they reduced it to 4. The club came out today and absolutely ripped the Premier League a new one, basically saying that they don't think that the Premier League basically set up as a cartel that only benefits the teams at the very top, and that it's set up so it's impossible for a team that, you know, didn't just get relegated previously and then came up with the parachute payments to prevail. Which I understand to an extent, but also you bought 40 players in 2 seasons. Yeah. So I can only have so much sympathy for you. Also, the way that they've conducted themselves of late, You know, I don't like them. And their fat Greek owner, who always has something to say, is running on the pitch threatening people, thinks he's a mob boss. No, dude, you may go back to owning diners and eating yogurt. All right, I don't need to hear from Evangelos Marinakis.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've gotten a little bit off the tangent there, but hey, listen, it's good content. It's good content. The Brendan Johnson is a great point. Just so you guys all know, he did sell for 48 million euros to Spurs. He's had an okay season, but obviously that influences what Forest books could have been. So we'll see at the end of the day if this affects Forest position. They have had waves of good performance against big teams. I still think with their performances at home, they could be potentially in a bit of a better situation than the bottom four that are there right now. When you look at their home record, they have four wins, three draws, and seven losses, which is the least amount of losses out of those bottom five teams. So we'll have to see if the City Ground really helps them out during this turbulent time. But one team or one league that is going through some turbulent time right now, which is a bonanza of punches, kicks, and just complete chaos on the pitch, is what we would see in the Turkish league. And Kyle, what happened there this weekend?
Carnage. Absolute carnage. 12 Trabzonspor fans were arrested after they attacked Fenerbahce players following Fenerbahce's 3-2 victory. At the heart of this was Mikey. I've always called him Batshuayi, so I don't know how to pronounce M-I-C-H-Y as a first name.
I think your second pronunciation was correct. I think it's Mishi.
Mishi? All right. So, yeah, Batshuayi with a roundhouse kick to one of those intruders. That would make Chuck Liddell look proud. I think Sean put that in there. That's a phenomenal reference. I mean, it was glorious. And it's like, what the fuck are you thinking? Like, oh, I know. I'm going to go and start a fight with a UFC guy. Like, you fucking fool. These guys have cleats on. They're athletes. And you're going to go push them? I mean, that dude got roundhouse clocked. And he deserved every second of it. I like to see it. Everyone likes to see it. I'm not sure if he got in a lot of trouble for that. I'm sure he's going to get something coming up later. But this incident just came just months after the president of another Turkish Super League club was arrested for punching a referee following a match. I mean, it's pretty fun what's going on over there from someone watching from the States, but it's getting dangerous for players. That is where the line has to get drawn. Player safety comes before anything. These guys are out there to make money. This is a job. It is a fan base. It is not a scenario that people should be getting threats or injured following games. What happens during the game, you can't control pace of play. People get heated. There's heart. There's red cards. So be it. But when the whistle is not going, when the ball is out of bounds, stuff like that, there's no tolerance for players getting hurt. So it's an embarrassment to the sport.
Shame.
And
it is.
It's got to change.
It is. I'm sure that's not what, you know, the allure for Wilfred Zaha was, that he'd get a little bit of mixed martial arts in their post games in the Turkish league from Crystal Palace, that's for sure. But hot news nonetheless. On a different league or a combination of leagues in the greatest tournament on earth in sports, other than the World Cup or the Euros on domestic club side, we have a Champions League update as well. The quarterfinals have been set, and we have our first setup, and it's going to be Arsenal versus Bayern Munich, a rematch, a revenge game for the ages. If you guys were not aware, the last time that Arsenal faced Bayern Munich, it was a complete slaughtering. I mean, this was worse than when rabbits were introduced to the Midwest and South. There was just carnage everywhere for that. 11-2 on aggregate. I mean, it was atrocious. 5-1 to 5-1 in both legs, home and away. Absolutely.
Not a math guy. Not
a, 10, yeah, sorry, 10-2. That's 10-2, not 11-2. This is your favorite
Premier League podcast, folks, not your favorite statistics podcast.
Don't
Let's
ask us
get
to
that
your
on
taxes.
Record.
We won't be doing any taxes, that's for
James
sure.
James would be have you locked up.
Or if you get away with it, I save you a ton of cash. If you want to roll the dice, we can figure out later on. But Bayern Munich, there's some more hot news with this quarterfinals setup. Is Bayern Munich, based off of their previous game at Lazio, their away fans are not allowed to participate or go to the next away game in the Champions League after they threw fireworks and firecrackers onto the pitch after beating Lazio in the round of 16. Another part that, so if you look at the Emirates Stadium, I think they have like 62, 66,000 fans inside their stadium. It's like the second or the third largest in the English Premier League since their move from Highbury. And it is now going to be full of Arsenal supporters in what has been a bit of a palace and a very difficult area to go and play against. So I could not be happier for the fact that this will be a sea of red and white. Yes, and, Kyle.
A quick question for you. You're telling me that Arsenal is going to get to fill those empty seats with their own fans? It's not just
correct.
Bayern can't come. It's going to be way harder for Bayern players, all that. Like that's
correct.
That's something. That's terrible.
Yeah. If you're a Bayern Munich fan, you're definitely a little bit concerned. But to be honest with you, if Leverkusen wasn't having a season that they're having right now, Bayern Munich is still playing very good soccer. They're still scoring a lot of goals. It's not like they're being uncharacteristic. Bayern Leverkusen, a team in the Bundesliga, has not had a performance that they have having it ever, really. So it's not going to be a walk in the park. It's not Arsenal fans saying, okay, Bayern Munich's trash this year. It's quite the opposite. This is the first time that they've gone into the round of the quarterfinals in two or three Champions Leagues, I believe. They've typically gone out, I think, the round 16 the past couple of ones, or failed at the quarterfinals. So it'll be a very interesting game. I think Arsenal is a bit of favorite, especially for this first leg coming off of a home win in the fashion that they had against Porto, which I cannot confirm nor deny that I was not able to participate in work at the office on Wednesday this week due to the condition and mental health that I was in after one or two or three or five or six shots of Jameson. I cannot confirm or deny that, but it was quite an exciting game to watch. I went to penalty kick shootouts. Real one quick dig at Porto. I would just hate to be a professional player and play the way that Porto played and just spent most of the time on the ground as per usual. Imagine being paid to do that. It couldn't be me. I'm just a man of integrity. But with that being said, we can go to the other quarterfinal leg, which is on the same side of the bracket. So the winner of Bayern Munich versus Arsenal. And I'm sorry, there is one little note here, and it's a good point to note as international break does pick up. In the last match that Harry Kane played, he did pick up a slight ankle injury this weekend, which puts him on the fringe for possibly being doubtful for that first match, which I'm sure he is probably going to milk because he does want to get back to London and go back and play against a full stadium of Arsenal supporters that will literally be shitting on him the entirety of the time, even though Harry Kane is literally the only player, is the player with the most goals scored against Arsenal in the history of the English Premier League currently. So I wouldn't mind if he does not participate in this game. But the winner of that game, or that leg, or the combo of the two, this quarterfinal matchup, would go on to face the winner of the next quarterfinals, which is Real Madrid versus Manchester City. And Kyle, I know you have some feelings on that, and why don't you take it away?
Yeah, it's going to be a rematch of the Champions League semifinals from last year and the year before. 2 years before, we had one of the most heartbreaking moments that I can remember as a City fan, which was letting up two goals in stoppage time in the second leg of the semifinals just for the loss. I mean, we were 4 minutes away from closing that game and moving on to the finals. But we meet them again the following year in the semis, dominate them 5-1, and now we're heading back there. The first leg is going to be in Madrid. One notable thing here is that Madrid's got a lot of players that are on a yellow, so if they pick up another yellow, they're going to miss the second leg at the Etihad. And fortunately for Madrid, the players aren't that quintessential to the team. It's just names like Jude Bellingham, Vinicius, Tchouameni, Camavinga. So it really shouldn't affect them because they're not going to be on the ball at all. They're going to get locked down just like they've been doing, and I'm a little worried. But it's going to be a good match. I'm excited for it. I think Madrid, you know, it's weeks down the road here. It's in April. But I think if Madrid and City can pull off a draw at the Bernabeu, it's going to be a huge, huge victory for Madrid, or for City. I'm sorry. I think taking 1 point out of there, even a 0-0, like just not losing, coming back to the Etihad, is going to be very, very important because Madrid is a dominant force come Champions League. They could be dead last right now in La Liga, and I'd still be worried about them.
Yeah. You were last year, if you remember in the pod, I think you were concerned about Manchester City's form in the Champions League at home games too. They didn't have a great round of 16, quarterfinal, semifinal at the home leg, but obviously walking away from Los Blancos with at least a tie in aggregate score would be gigantic. But this is, I think we can all agree that this side of the Champions League bracket is the more difficult side of the two. But Sean, why don't you talk about the other side of the Champions bracket?
Absolutely. So we have Barcelona PSG, which certainly has some intrigue of its own. Luis Enrique, who in his first year of managing at PSG, returns to the club he managed to a treble in 2015, taking on a guy who was crucial for that team, which was Xavi. And since he's announced his departure from Barcelona, they're unbeaten in their last 10 matches. They just came off a really big win at the weekend over Atletico Madrid, so they seem to be rounding into form at the right time. But that certainly will be a big matchup. Obviously, we know Mbappe leaves at the end of the season. I'm sure he'd like to leave on a high note and deliver that Champions League to PSG. And then the other matchup is Atletico Madrid versus Borussia Dortmund. On paper, these are the two weakest sides that remain, I would say.
Mm.
But never, ever doubt Diego Simeone in a knockout game. He's never lost at the Wanda Metropolitano or previously at the, I think it was the, I forget what the name of the stadium was, but he never had lost there either in a Champions League knockout home game. So Madrid are always, Atletico are always difficult to break down. They're going to shithouse their way through 90 minutes and then 90 minutes away as well. They were able to nick a result against a very strong Inter side, who's probably the third or fourth favorites, entering the knockout round. So that'll definitely be interesting, but overall been disappointing seasons for both sides. We talked about Bayern being in second place. Well, Dortmund's actually down in fifth, and same with Atletico in La Liga. They're in fifth as well, which for both teams, they should be in top three at minimum, typical, for most years.
Yeah, this was we had two games on either side of this bracket that ended in penalty kicks. And was it for the first time in 10 or 14 years that a knockout stage ended in PKs, largely because of away goal aggregate was a factor in there. But to have two in the same week, or back-to-back days, really was very exciting, a bit of a thriller for even the non-avid sports watcher. Definitely something crazy. And then one final question before we move on to the weekend wrap-up, more of a yes or no for you guys. If Mbappe wins the Champions League for PSG, is all forgiven for him and PSG, you think?
Has to be. I think he's been rumored to leave for probably two or three summers now. They're going to win they were winning Ligue 1 before he was there. They'll win it after he's gone. But if he delivers that, I think he's a legend forever and gets a statue outside.
Yeah, as he should. Kyle, yes or no, you think that all would be right in the world?
I agree with Sean here. I think absolutely. If he can bring the trophy home, that's one of the trophies correct me if I'm wrong, but he's never won that since his time there.
That's true.
It's really the one thing he's missing. I do am pretty firm on the fact I think PSG is really mishandling the situation. As Sean said, I think he deserves a friggin' statue outside anyways for what he's brought to the club over his career there. But it's France, and they are some nasty people in the boardroom there.
We didn't lost any hope of
Perry,
a French listener.
Perry.
I stand by what I said. 100%. You know, like, it's been a disgrace. We've been dealing with this shit for 2 years with Mbappe trying to leave. They've been fucking him around. I'm not impressed.
I think it's more the opposite. I think it's more him jerking them around than anything else. But
a little bit of both. But you got to remember,
lost Saquon Barkley last week. I can't deal with this. It's all the organization's fault. That's what we're sticking with.
Fair enough. Let's forget that he foregoed his loyalty bonus of $80 million in good conscience to help PSG out there. We'll forget about that for now. But
yeah, thank you.
Insane.
Hey,
yeah.
Fuck PSG. Sorry, I hate that. Sorry to all my PSG listeners, but I don't like
all the PSG homies out there. But let's bring it back to earth. Let's bring it back to the English Premier League. Bring it back to England. And we have the weekend roundup. Like we said last week, it was a split week. We had most of it actually in FA Cup action, and only half of the events were English Premier League related. But the first game we're going to highlight here is the Fulham 3, Tottenham Hotspurs 0 at Craven Cottage. We had a XG of 3.12 for Fulham and an XG of 2.48 for Tottenham. But they failed to score a goal for the first time, I believe, in 36 consecutive games. So the record of 55 consecutive games with a goal scored for Arsenal still stands. They were a bit away, but it was a great form from Tottenham on that. But Sean, why don't you take it away and kind of go over the game here and Fulham and unfortunately your lock of the week.
Yeah, just continuing a trend of absolute desolate performances from my lock of the week specifically. Yeah, Fulham dominated this game. I don't care what the possession stats say. If you watch this game, particularly in the first half, Fulham was all over them. They created a ton of chances. And the guy that stands out for me is Rodrigo Muniz. He scored a brace in this game on each side of halftime. He's got 6 in his last 7 appearances. So he's actually now the top scorer for Fulham this season. And he's only 22 years old. I think, you know, one of our big questions going into the season was how would they replace the goal scoring output of Mitrovic? Well, they went Moneyball and they did it in the aggregate. You know, they have 5 from Raul Jimenez. They have 7 from Muniz. They got, you know, additional performances from Iwobi and others as well, where they've kind of increased their output. So that's been huge. I just wanted to talk about Anthony Robinson. I thought he was really good in this game as well. Just a gorgeous ball in on the first goal. Second touch from Muniz was beautiful. His second goal was about as ugly as it gets, off a corner. He got hurt, flopped down, and the ball hit off him and went in. But he does not care. He'll take it any way he can get it. And yeah, it's a huge blow for Tottenham, a team that, you know, coming off a huge win last week at Villa Park, they immediately follow it up with a stinker in a game where they could have, you know, furthered that, or I guess closed the gap for fourth place, because Villa did drop points against West Ham this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. They now stay in fifth place, 3 points behind Aston Villa, but because Aston Villa did play at the same weekend, Spurs still maintain that game in hand against Chelsea. But absolutely a crazy, crazy time. And even better, like I said last week, remember when Tottenham thought they were going to win the league in October? I can't remember how many people aggravated on Instagram commenting, "Don't worry, Spurs, you'll drop points. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay." I'm still scared of you guys. I'll give you that. I'm still scared of our game that's coming up. But I'm gonna get those digs in when I can. The next game we have here, though, is the FA Cup upset, possibly of the century here. And it's Coventry, who are currently sitting in 8th place, I believe, in the championship, upset Wolves at the Molyneux. So it was an away win for them. So here's the storyline that you kind of is crazy to think about. But the XGs here was Coventry 4.51 to Wolves 2.28. So this was an earlier in the morning game on Saturday. It wasn't too early, but I remember waking up, I put it on, and the Wolves had just scored a goal to make it 1-1. So I caught like about the last 20 minutes of this match, and it was on crack. Wolves scored twice in 5 minutes to give them the lead in the 88th minute, which is the first goal I saw, just to have it taken away from them later on in regular stoppage time, which was insane. Everyone had ideas of this going to the distance, going to extra time, going to penalty kicks, going the full yardage, and Coventry had a second idea. They were able to turn the game around thanks to USMNT, the United States men's national team player, and forward Hajid Wright, who assisted Ellis Sims' equalizer in the 90+7th minute and then scored a beautiful curled finish from the left side of the box to the bottom right corner of the net in the 90+10th minute to shock the Wolves and advance to Wembley. So Coventry looked to be the first championship team to play in the FA Cup final since Cardiff City in 2008, and no team outside of England's top flight has ever won the cup since 1980 when West Ham defeated the Gunners. Now, this was a crazy game. Coventry really did dominate the majority of the possession, not the possession, but the actual momentum of this game. They more than doubled the shots on target for the matchup. I think the Wolves had 5 and Coventry had, I can actually check right now, why even guess? The Wolves had 5 shots on target and Coventry had 12 shots on target. Total shots were 17-24. But the big thing here is Coventry just couldn't capitalize on all their chances. They had 6 big chances created and 4 of them they missed. Towards the end of the game, it was kind of back and forth. It felt like a professional NBA basketball game where it wasn't a lot of defense, but it was back and forth down the pitch and it was a lot of offense driven power. Now Coventry just threw everything in the kitchen sink at the Wolves within that stoppage time, and it was really, really quite the exciting game to see. If you didn't see all the goals, they were all very good in build-up and actual clinical finishing of them, but I will say probably the best looking of the 3 that I saw, the last 3 goals, was probably Wolves to take the lead. Build-up came straight from the back, moved very nicely down the side of the pitch into the middle, and it was a great finish. I'm forgetting who it was from. I believe it was a great pass and then a finish from Bueno. So, yes, it was a great goal And you had Sims correct with two goals in the game for Coventry. So really quite an interesting one. The real Sky Blues currently sit in eighth, like I said before, in the championship, and they're 4 points out of promotion playoff spot. So this is going to be a big momentum swing for them. And then if they win, they actually get into the Euros, Europa League, correct? FA Cup. So yes, that would be insane as well, which would be wild. And to be honest with you, they're very fortunate to have drawn Manchester United. And the fact that it's not at Old Trafford will be a bit of a help as well. Although Manchester United always seem to draw at home. So the semifinals and the finals being at Wembley is something that Coventry will definitely be looking forward to. So very, very awesome, interesting, and intense game. But we even had a more intense game on the other side. Unless, Sean, you have anything to add for Coventry's upset, you can pop right into Manchester Liverpool.
I just quickly wanted to mention that Pedro Neto suffered a hamstring injury in that game against Coventry, which is a huge blow to Wolves. Obviously, they're still in competition to get that last European spot, and he's been their talisman throughout the year. So losing him to a hamstring injury, which could end his season, is a big blow. Yeah. Really unfortunate. And speaking of unfortunate, Manchester United beat Liverpool 4-3 in the FA Cup quarterfinal. Our boy Ian probably giving it the big one yesterday. I'll just say two things. First of all, the FA Cup is for absolute squares. That's why Kyle's team's going to win it. And my second comment is I'm actually happy that Manchester United won this game for two reasons. Number one, Erik ten Hag will definitely stay in the job next year and will win fuck all. And two, it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable about going to Old Trafford in 3 weeks in the Premier League, because I just think it's real difficult to go there twice and come away with victories, especially in quick succession. So the Premier League is obviously is the number one focus. Liverpool's not in the Champions League. You know, I still want to win Europa League. They've won the League Cup, but the priority is the Premier League. It takes a game off, but overall, this game was absolute bananas. Within 10 minutes, Manchester United could have scored two or three goals. They came out of the gates flying. Eventually, they did score with Scott McTominay, scoring off a rebound, but they probably should have had two or three, like I said, in the first half hour of this game. And overall, it was a story of, despite a game with seven goals, with a lot of missed chances on both sides, around that half hour mark, Liverpool settled into the game a bit, but previous to that, Man United were all over them. For once, they seemed to actually be pressing high up the pitch without leaving the gaps in the midfield, which has kind of plagued them throughout the year. But Liverpool were able to respond quickly. They scored once with Alexis McAllister, set up by Darwin Nunez, and then Mo Salah quickly after that on a rebound of his own to take the lead 2-1 into halftime. And from there, it really was Liverpool's game. And again, like I talked about, it was a game of missed chances. So Liverpool were the much better team for the vast majority of the second half. But unfortunately, it was a guy who I've shit on incessantly for the last 18 months, and Antony, who tied the game spinning of all ways to score. Him spinning up, swiveling around and putting it bottom corner. It's a tough one for me.
Weak foot.
Yeah, his second goal all season in 28 appearances, sent it into extra time. And then, again, Liverpool looks like they have their moment. They score in the 112th minute through Harvey Elliott, who's had a great season. But finally, Rashford, who was really dangerous all game. He had probably four. I mean, I don't know how many big chances were created, but Rashford had four or five golden opportunities. He finally converted one off a turnover to tie it. And then Amad Diallo scored off a corner. For some reason, Liverpool had eight players forward for the corner. Endo and Elliott seemed to have a kind of a miscommunication. It led to a break where Amad Diallo slotted home in just his fourth appearance all season, and Man United came away the victors and head to the FA Cup semifinals.
Yeah, definitely one of the better games we've seen Manchester United, and I watched it in bits and pieces because, of course, it was on St. Paddy's Day. So I'm more curious of what your activities were there, you, my Irish friend, Sean Larkin. I was half expecting you to actually be walking in the Pearl River Irish Parade. I don't know. I figured you had a kilt and bagpipe ready to go.
My parade days were over. I walked in the New York Parade on Saturday. So,
all right, there we go.
Generic Irish guy behavior.
Hey, send a clip. We'll clip it. Put it on the gram for everybody to see the walking pride of the Irishman. Do you wear a kilt? Can you?
Hell no.
Mm. You still go commando though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time. I'm pretty sure if there's like a certain point past my knees, if they're exposed, it'd start blinding people from the translucentness. So I'm going to say no.
Very good. Well, like I said before, Manchester United definitely had a good showing in this one. Rashford, more particularly on your big chances comment, Manchester United had 5 big chances this game and they missed 3. Liverpool only were able to generate 1. And then, of course, I'll give a big shout out to Elliot. We mentioned him coming in on that right side. His left foot is dangerous. The kid looks to shoot every time he has a window. And it doesn't have to be pretty. His took a deflection and went in. And I thought at that point, you guys had the game wrapped up. I actually went in and I was kind of briefly watching it with one of my girlfriend's family members, Maddie Fick. He's a big Manchester United fan. And we were bouncing back and forth off each other. And I told him once McAllister and Salah scored the two goals, I said, I just don't see you guys scoring 2 more goals, 3 more goals to win against Liverpool. It's very difficult to score 1 goal against Liverpool, let alone 4, even though you had stoppage time. So a very intense, it will go down as a classic for sure.
I think overall, too, just like Liverpool's game management in this game was really poor. They should have been able to see the game out in full time, like in regular time, excuse me. And just didn't. And then again, having the lead with 8 minutes to go and extra time, obviously they're tired. They've had a ton of, like the guys that played basically in this game have played a ton of minutes of late, but still discouraging. I think that's really where Liverpool is lacking compared to the other two title contenders. City and Arsenal can see games out, no problem. I think Liverpool's better at coming from behind, but when they are in the lead, they're not quite as rock solid at locking a game down.
Yeah. I think that was their first time actually losing coming from behind. But go ahead, Kyle. What you got, my friend?
Yeah, 2 points stood out for me that game. I mean, you guys are talking about Rashford. He played fine, whatever, but he had a chance at the end of regulation to put that game to bed in like one of the last kicks of the game. And that was a pretty bad miss, if we're being honest. I thought he played, if he didn't get that equalizing goal in stoppage, this would have gone down as a pretty big failure of a game for Marcus Rashford, in my opinion. But the other thing I wanted to point out was Salah had a chance, I want to say around like the 8th or 9th minute, which it barely missed. It was a first-time volley across his body off of like a 30-yard cross. Even with the miss, I thought that was one of the most impressive shots I saw all game. That took a ton of talent to even get on target. And even the announcers were saying like, what an audacious attempt. And it's like, yeah, well, he was about 2 it's centimeters Mozart away from hitting the post there. Like, that was a what was he going to do? There was no one else up there. He had to take a shot, and he put that thing pretty much on target. I thought it was very impressive by Mo Salah that game.
This was his first game back starting, right, in the starting lineup. So that's another big benefit as a Liverpool fan to see that Mo Salah is back in the starting lineup. And then you have, obviously, Szoboszlai, Endo, and McAllister in there as well, all currently fit. So they're coming back into form a bit. You even had Robertson starting on that left side. The starting Gomez on that right side was a bit interesting to me, Sean. Why didn't we see Connor Bradley over there?
Well, he did end up playing in this match. I think overall, maybe Klopp just was going for defensive reliability. I don't think you can play Robertson and Bradley together. I think they're both guys who would like to, you know, get further up the pitch, where Gomez is a little bit more of your defensive reliable guy as a you know, center back by trade.
Right.
Probably had something to do with it. It will be interesting to see what it looks like. Trent Alexander-Arnold should be back for the Brighton game after the break. I don't think he'll start, but he'll probably come off the bench. And then from there, is it Robertson at left back? Is it Gomez? For me, it should be Gomez, because I think, again, Trent really likes to, you know, get forward. Even if he goes into that inverted role, I think Gomez gives you a little bit more solidity. So I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see how Klopp approaches it the rest of the way, but it's good to have those options back. I think Jota, Alisson, and Konate should all be back from injury as well following that international break.
Well, this is what we want. We want to run in with fully fit, fully functioning teams to really get us all going and say, hey, each team gave it their best. But until then, we'll talk about a few more rapid kicks. So, Kyle, do you want to lead off the way with the express acknowledgments in our rapid kicks segment.
Absolutely. First thing I want to talk about is that Man City and Chelsea will square off in the FA Cup. This is going to be the semifinals. These two teams have met before in tournaments in the last couple of years. It's been hit and miss. I know Chelsea won the Champions League final against us. It's another team I'm just genuinely scared about. Whether or not they're scoring, their defense has usually been good. That will go with saying, though, that Manchester City is the first team in history to reach the FA Cup semis 6 seasons in a row. They did set a little record there. As Sean says, the FA Cup is for squares. It's hard to disagree with him. It's one of those like peasant records that they're going to put a little plaque on the wall that people walk past every now and then and be like, oh, yeah, well, cool, that's right. But like, it is what it is. But other than that, there was one really, really cool game in the Premier League this year. James, you want to talk about the Luton game?
The Luton Town Nottingham Forest game. So we alluded to it very briefly last week that this was the battle of the bottom, or the potentially battle of the bottom, the two teams fighting relegation. Like we said in the hot news segment, Forest are now 1 point beneath Luton Town due to their point deduction. But this was a pretty close game. Luton came from behind to knot this one up in a tie. Thanks to the points deduction, they're now safe. So Luton Town keeps chugging away. Were they home this game? I think they were home this game. So I anticipated a little bit more fight from them, especially because of what happened. But I think there's another game this weekend that was kind of quite a bit more of a highlight in terms of absolutely bonkersness, and it was with Luton Town. So I think you meant this one originally, Kyle.
I'm not
so
sure. I had completely forgotten about the Nottingham Forest Luton game.
Yeah, and with good reason, because the game that really stood out was midweek. I think it was on Wednesday night between Bournemouth and Luton. Luton was cruising. They looked like they were going to be actually just a point behind Forest going into that game at the weekend. They were up 3-0 at halftime. And then Bournemouth with the comeback for the ages. It's the first time in 21 years a team came from behind down 3-0 to win the match 4-3. Only the fifth time in Premier League history that's ever happened. Antoine Semenyo had two goals late in this game to win it. Just an outrageous game. If you haven't seen the highlights for that, look it up. It's nutty. Obviously disappointing for our boys at Luton and Bournemouth. You know, for them it's big because of late they have struggled. I don't think they've ever been, you know, a threat to go down by any means, even though Kyle did call them feathers just this time 12 months ago.
was this after they lost 9-0?
Yeah, that was ages ago, guy.
I remember like yesterday. What a game.
But
I mean, the goal quality of that game was unbelievable.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's, you know, for Bournemouth, they win only their second game since January. So for them, since the new year. So that's big for them. Obviously, they had a really great December, but then they've kind of cooled off. But they came back and won this game, which is huge for them. And, you know, moved it down to another battle of the Bs. Brentford v. Burnley, Kyle.
Yeah, Burnley gets a win, unexpected against Brentford. I don't think anyone saw this one coming. It definitely helped that Brentford was down to 10 men in the 8th minute of the game as Reguilon got sent off. It wasn't that great a red. It was just a send-off. Nothing to talk about there. But the fun part is that Burnley didn't even dominate. Like, Brentford almost drew that game. Burnley took a lead immediately. It was a penalty, so they scored the penalty. They're up 1-0. They finished the half 1-0. They get a second goal around the 60th minute, and it's still, like, even up 2-0 against 10 guys, you just don't have that great feeling in the back of your stomach, like, we're going to close this game. And Brentford did draw one back in the 88th, and I really, really thought that they were going to come back and tie that game. But Vincent Kompany gets his victory. You love to see it. The world loves to see it. James, any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, it just goes to show, once you're a shitty Spurs player, you're always a shitty Spurs player. And that is exactly what Sergio Reguilon received this game. I mean, he played 8 minutes. He got -3 fantasy points. And I think this was his first, let's see, this season, he's played in 8 games. And I think this might have been his first start. Which is absurd. Or no, I don't think it was his first start. He started 11 of the 17 matches he has played this season. He played full 90 against Chelsea, 73-73. The dude's shit still, though, so it's okay. We'll let that live on. He's 27 years old. Oh, he's kind of close to birthday to me. He's December 16th. I'm the 6th. Oh, wow. He's 96. Oh, man. I realize how old I am every time I look at these players' ages. It's insane. But one shitty, always shitty. But, again, the only real shitty thing that we have to wrap up here is the fact that it is international break Blues. So there is no action this weekend. It gives us all a little bit of break. I know, Sean, you're probably looking forward to it since the JMU Dukes are made it into the March Madness, and that game is in Brooklyn. I'm sure that you will actually probably be hungover for the entirety of the weekend with that one being on Friday night.
Where Brooklyn at? That's all I'm going to say. No, that's going to be sick. If you see a young man escorted out of the game for being too passionate and saying heinous things about the state of Wisconsin, that'll be me.
But don't worry too much. We will make sure to post bail for Sean and be back next week on Monday, because we will be doing the run-in. We will be talking about the last 10 or 9. I think it's 10, right? It's 10 matches at this point. It's 9. It's the last 9 matches for the... Oh, no, it's 10 for the top three, because we have 28 games. This week games were pretty much chalked up because of the FA Cup, but we will be talking about the last 10 games for the top three and most likely the bottom three. So make sure you do come back on Monday next week. Gents, do you have anything else to say? I know it was a short one this week, but again, it's international Blues.
No, I think you covered everything. This was, not too many games played this weekend, but we got gifted with unbelievable games. So I felt complete for sure.
Absolutely. Well, without further ado, we will miss you, EPL, over the weekend, but we will not miss you next week on Monday. So until then, enjoy the remainder of your week, and we'll talk to you then.